December 9th, 2025, 6 p.m., meeting of the Montville Planning and Zoning Commission to order. And our next order of business is the Pledge Allegiance.
Pledge Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Secretary, roll call, please.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, it's the ninth, okay. Okay, Commissioner Longton.
Here.
Yes. Commissioner Terry.
Here.
Yes. Commissioner Gillette. Absent. Commissioner Pike.
Here.
Commissioner Jarvis, I am here. Commissioner Lundy, she's on maternity leave. And Commissioner Kobluck, absent. Commissioner Summers.
Here.
He's here. And Chairman Pena.
Here.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six here.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. We have no additions or changes to the agenda. And I entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the November 18th, 2025 regular meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay, so the minutes are accepted. This evening, are there any remarks from the public not relating to items on the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on. Agenda item 7, public hearing. We have none for this evening. So we're going to go to our old business, agenda item 8. First item is 8A, 25 site A-2227, Route 32, map 103, lot 92. Redevelopment of site for mixed use. The owner applicant is Uncasville Property, LLC. Meredith.
Thank you. Meredith Badaluca for the record. This proposal is for the redevelopment of a site for mixed-use building to include retail space on the first floor and 16-unit multifamily on the second and third floor. The site currently is improved with a single-family residence, which was constructed in 1925, a 912-square-foot structure that was constructed and used as a beauty salon and barbershop in 1965, and a 1,837-square-foot structure, which was constructed and used as a package store in 1965. The single-family residence and two commercial structures that are on there are shown on sheet 01 of your plan. A portion of the residential structure and a shed encroach into the town right-of-way, as well as a walkway in front of the residence. A portion of the handicapped parking space and an adjacent parking space both encroach onto Leo Street, which you can see on sheet 01. The entire frontage of this property currently is along Route 32 with a wide open curb cut, which does not assist with the flow of traffic in the parking area. The applicant's proposing to remove all of the existing buildings, accessory structures, and paving in order to construct a new three-story building with a footprint of 6,669 square feet. The first floor will consist of a 4,570 square foot package store and two additional 750 square feet commercial spaces. The second and third floor will be used for 16 apartments, four of which will be studio apartments, and the remaining 12 units will be one bedroom apartments. Both of these uses are permitted in the C1 zoning district. The applicant is proposing two defined curb cuts. One will be on Route 32 and a secondary curb cut on Leo Street. The plans provide for stormwater management where none existed previously, and as noted by the consulting town engineer, this will be an improvement over the existing conditions from a stormwater management perspective. When speaking with Public Works Director Carlson, he did indicate to me that there's historic flooding in the front parking area of this parcel and on Leo Street, and the applicant has included a dry well on the corner of the property near Route 32 and Leo Street. The plans also call for additional catch basins at the curb cut on Leo Street, and that is shown on sheet 4 of your plans. Per zoning regulation 18.2.21 and 18.3, a parking plan may be submitted by a Connecticut licensed professional engineer, which has been reviewed and approved by the town engineer and the director of planning in lieu of parking requirements listed in section 18.3. The applicant has provided a parking plan on sheet 2, indicating a total number of 43 required spaces per ITE parking generation manual. That's broken down as follows: one space per studio apartment, one space per one bedroom apartment, and one space per 250 square feet of retail space. Our zoning regulations require one space per efficiency, two spaces per each one bedroom unit, three guest parking spaces for every 10 units, and one space for every 250 square feet of retail space under 20,000 square feet. Per our zoning regulations, the total number of required spaces would be 61. The consultant town engineer, Dave McKay of Boundaries LLC, has reviewed the parking plan and offered the following comments. The applicant has proposed to use an alternate parking calculation for single-family bedroom components of the development based on information from the Institute of Transportation Engineers, ITE. Other parking requirements are in accordance with the Town of Mottville regulations. Per ITE's parking generation manual, low-rise multifamily housing has an average peak parking demand of 0.85 spaces per dwelling unit, or 0.59 spaces per bedroom. The proposed one parking space per dwelling unit is in accordance with the ITE guidelines, and parking demand should not exceed the amount of parking proposed as part of this application. Also wanted to point out that per zoning regulation 18.16.1, landscaping of parking lot is not required, as the parking lot is less than 80,000 square feet. However, the applicant has provided a landscaping plan shown on sheet 5 of your plans. And also, when speaking with Land Use and Development Director, he requested a streetscaping, and they have provided that on the landscaping plan. I also spoke with the applicant's engineer during the first review of the site plans that I did, and I asked for sidewalks on the Route 32 frontage, and they have agreed, and they are shown on the revised plan. The comments that are not listed as agency comments in the staff report are attached to your staff report from the Building Department, WPCA, and Public Works. John did look at the plan when he was in my office, and his comment has been addressed. And at this time, I will ask that Ellen Bartlett comes up on behalf of the applicant.
Okay.
It says it's on. Can you hear me?
Thank you.
Okay. My name is Ellen Bartlett. I'm with Greensite Design LLC. We're located at 317 Main Street, Norwich, Connecticut. And I'm representing the applicant and owner, which is Uncasville Properties, LLC. Meredith did a very thorough job, so I'm going to be brief. I'm starting with the survey plan, which this is the existing conditions. As she described, there's two commercial buildings on the site and one small single-family residential. building. And the commercial building includes Shintuck Package Store?
Yes.
Shintuck. So everyone's oriented. We're also at the intersection with Leo Street. And as you can see, presently it's just all pavement from, you can pull anywhere in off of 32 or Leo Street. It's all connected, which isn't ideal for traffic flow. People sometimes get confused. They're not sure where to go, and then they hit the brakes. The property is zoned commercial. It's approximately 1 acre, and there's little less than 0.1 tenths of an acre. You can see a little bit of wetlands on the perimeter of the site. We've already been to the Inland Wetlands Commission, and they have approved this plan. What we actually intend to do is tear out everything, take out all the pavement, take out all the buildings, and start from scratch. We're proposing 1 3-story building. First floor would be a package store and some additional rental commercial space. Second floor and third floor would be much needed apartments. You know, Connecticut needs them. There'll be 12 one-bedroom and 4 studio apartments. The one thing that the site is missing now is any kind of stormwater treatment. So what we're proposing are 2 basins in the rear of the site. There'll be temporary sedimentation basins during the construction phase, and they've been designed to actually exceed the requirements of 2024 Connecticut guidelines for soil and sedimentation control. And then once the project is completed, they will be converted into permanent stormwater treatment basins that will be there for the life of the facility. And these basins have also been designed to meet and exceed the requirements of Connecticut's 2024 Stormwater Quality Manual. You'd think that would roll off my tongue easier, but it isn't. The project proposes to redevelop the site for a mixed-use building. As I've described, it's going to be commercial, and there's also going to be apartments on the top floors. I did bring a rendering so you can see what the building's going to look like. You can see the apartments all will have decks so that people will have an outdoor element. The first floor is larger than the second and third floors, and that's where the liquor store will be. The plans and the reports for this project have been reviewed by all staff from Planning Commission, WPCA, Fire Marshal, the Building Department, the Police Department, and Dave McKay, the town's consulting engineer. And the final plans that are before you tonight, we've addressed all of their review comments. So if you want me to go through any of those revisions, I would be happy to, or answer any questions.
Okay. Commissioner members, any questions for Ms. Bartlett on the application? Wills?
The only question I have is, what is the building made out of? What's it going to be, brick, vinyl, what's it?
It's going to be a variety. It's going to be a timber-built building. It's going to have siding in some areas. It's going to have block in other areas. They're going to mix it up so it has an interesting look. It's not going to be a metal building at all. It's going to be stick-built.
That's kind of where I was going.
Yes, and it's going to be different sidings, vinyl siding along here, but all along the bottom will be an attractive block.
Will it have a basement?
No, it will not have a
slab.
Basement. Slab.
Thank you.
Chuck?
Yes, would you speak to the deviation from the town regulations for 2 bedrooms for a 2 parking spots for 1 bedroom item?
Yes, what I always do is I go to the handbook, which we all live by as engineers, the Institute of Transportation Engineers, and we look at what they've recommended because they know what people really use. studio apartments and one-bedroom apartments don't always have two cars. And we also have a lot of parking for the retail that won't be used as much at night as some of the apartments will use. They've actually found that it's less than, the average is less than one car per bedroom. And we've got, we rounded up, and of course they're providing one space per bedroom throughout the building. We were just really trying to get as much apartments on here as we could because they are needed. And we've just found when you have put in those two spaces per car and then you have all the excess parking for the retail, there's a lot of empty spaces.
Okay.
And nobody wants extra spaces anymore. You know, it's not good for the environment, and we try to get it down to what really will be used, and what we've found is the average.
Is there a specific size for a parking spot?
They're in accordance with the regulations. They're 9 feet by 18 feet, 24-foot aisles.
So if a guest comes, they'll just park in the...
They'll probably use some of the excess spaces that the retail...
And it won't say for...
No. They're not going to be
only.
They're not going to be assigned. And there's a lot of retail parking spaces here. Ooh, doesn't say on this plan, but
do you know
Meredith,
how many there?
Do you know how many are assigned?
27
parking spaces. There'll probably be one, maybe two people working in the liquor store, and then people come and go. But 24 cars is a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So I think there will be they'll be sharing the spaces.
Yeah. So both the retail spots for the business will probably be in the front, right?
Yes.
You know.
Yes, the retail spaces
then
will be here.
They probably would be more like in the, towards the side and the back, right?
Right, and we have a sidewalk that runs along the back and access to the back for the apartments. You can go in from the front or the rear, so it'll be easy. The dumpster is over here, so you know if they're coming out using the dumpster and then on their way out to their car, it's just natural that they'll want to park in the rear.
Mm-hmm. Snow Joe. Removal?
Yep.
Sorry.
Oh, hang on, Joe. Go ahead.
Snow removal? That's always ask that question.
Yes. We've discussed this with the clients. There's not a lot of room on this site for storage, so they're going to haul it out. You can pile it up. Put it in truck and haul it out when we have the big storms.
Wow.
In general, it goes away lately in Connecticut, but there are winters where it builds up and then you have to remove it.
You know, that was one of my questions with snow removal, because the parking lot's right up to the property line, so snow's going to be pushed into the adjacent properties.
Well, and the slopes go up. It's not going to go far.
But even down towards Leo Street, it's going to be pushed out there.
Yes.
How is construction going to be handled? Because I know there's a catch basin in the corner, which is right on the property line at Leo Street. So there's going to be excavation into adjacent properties.
There will be excavation into the right-of-way for Leo Street, but the town engineer who reviewed this was actually asking for us to take some of the drainage. If you really look at the contours out here,
mm-hmm.
this whole area is almost dead flat.
Right.
So when big storms, it does build up. So we've put a catch basin here, really not for our project, but to take some of the water off of Leo Street, because this is a low spot right in here, bring it into our drainage system and bring it to the rear. We've also put in a low rain garden in the front. There's no curbing along here between Leo Street and 32. There's no curbing, so the water that builds up in the street can get into this rain garden, and then we have a dry well underneath it. We did test holes on this site. They're extremely well-drained gravel soils out there. So this dry well, it is connected to the drainage system, but we anticipate that most times that water's just going to go into the ground. Now that this whole area isn't paved anymore, we're going to allow for the water to go into the ground. So DOT was very happy about that because they have an issue here.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave them the dry well, and this catch basin out here is, like I said, it's not for the project. It's really to help Leo Street. So even though we're putting it in Leo Street, it's for that purpose. Because we also have two on our site so that No stormwater from the site is leaving and going to Leo Street and adding to it. Where right now, the water just is all over the place down here.
Mm.
It's flat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, thank you.
All right, anyone else with any questions for Ellen or staff? John, go ahead.
Okay, public water, public sewer?
Yes, public water and sewer. They were existing on the site. We are bringing in a fire line, so we mm-hmm. had to go out into the road for that. There was a service, but it was just a domestic service, a 1-inch. So we're putting in an 8-inch to come in so that we, because the building will be sprinkled.
And since they're not going to be having a basement, well, the heat will probably be electric.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Or gas?
It could be gas.
Yeah.
The building plans that we have at this point are preliminary.
Yeah.
After the approval is when they really get the mechanical and electrical guys involved and really spend the money to develop the plans.
Okay. Thank you, Ellen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This has no bearing on your decision. I'm just curious because this is a 16-unit residential development, and it's ironic because it has to do with a conversation we're going to have during my director's report. But would the owner, applicant, Ellen, would they be interested and willing to work with us on maybe one or two of those units becoming deed restricted or affordable?
Affordable.
Yep.
You
don't have to answer that. Maybe think about it. We could go back to your client
we
and
definitely
ask
could.
If we could talk about that.
I thought Montville had met their affordable housing requirement.
We're only at 5%, a little below.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I can absolutely talk to them about that.
Even if we are, it might be nice to continue above.
It is always a good idea to get 10% every time you do anything.
Mm-hmm.
This is a note for the, I don't want to use you as a guinea pig, I'm sorry, but
no.
Under the House Bill 8002, any development for housing that's mixed use in a commercial district will be as of right. You're already as of right, which is what this is, so you're ahead of the curve. A lot of towns don't do that. The other thing is, though for 16 units and below, you can't use parking as a means for a decision. So there, you won't be able to regulate parking for units that are 16 and below. Above that, you can require it via a traffic report. Again, you're ahead of the curve because you're already doing that, which the applicant has provided anyway. I just wanted to say that for an example. We'll talk about that later. But this is like you're the poster child of that threshold type of thing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Just picked up on
it was a good opportunity
yeah.
to
yes.
point it out. No,
yeah.
yep. very good. Thank
and
you.
And there are a number of towns that require 10% of affordable housing on any project.
Yep.
It's not an uncommon request. So we'll look into that for you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
The size of them are probably going to be here anyway.
They're going to be well
yeah.
below
yeah.
the affordable level.
That's all.
Okay.
What size is the water line there now?
There's a 1-inch domestic because there's no sprinklers out there. So we're putting in an 8-inch so that we can, the building needs to be sprinkled and a 4-inch won't serve.
Okay,
that.
So you're going to take the 1-inch out and put in an 8-inch?
We're going to cap it and block it in place.
Okay. All right.
All
set, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything to add, Meredith? There is a motion in the package. I would love to entertain that from someone.
Oh, I guess I'll give it a shot tonight.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
I'll give Lisa a break tonight.
Can just note the conditions
okay.
in the
sounds good. Okay. I make a motion to approve with condition numbers 1 through 21 as indicated in the staff report dated December 9th, 2025, application 25 site 8 for mixed use building to include retail space on the first floor and 16 unit multifamily use on the second and third floors at 2227 Route 32 103-092-000 in accordance with the Montville zoning regulations and the application. Supporting documentation and a plan set entitled Proposed Retail and Residential Project 2227 Norwich New London Turnpike, Uncasville, Connecticut, prepared by Greensite Design LLC, dated June 2025 and revised December 8th, 2025.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call vote. Mr. Secretary, please.
Okay. Commissioner Longton?
Favor.
Commissioner Terry?
Favor.
He's not here. Commissioner Pike?
Favor.
I'm here. Commissioner Jarrett, yes. Commissioner Lane, not here. Commissioner Pogue, not here. Commissioner Summers?
In favor.
Commissioner Pinias?
In favor.
Everybody here is in favor. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Okay. All right, remind the applicant, should they have any issues come up and they need to make any change to their site conditions, the approval's in black and white, okay? Please contact the office prior to making any changes.
Any questions?
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Agenda item 8B, 25, sub 4, number 257, Chesterfield Road, map 29, lot 66, 001. It's a four-lot re-subdivision. The owner is Zachary Cash. The applicant is Michael DeSaltles.
Desatels.
Gonna make a note of that. And what do we have, Meredith?
This application was approved with conditions on September 23rd, 2025. Due to our meeting being early in December, they had to file their Mylars on the town clerk's land records by January 9th, 2026. They still have some conditions to meet, and they're not going to meet that date, so they are requesting a 90-day extension in the time to file. So that will bring their time to file to April 9th, 2026.
Very good. Okay. Commission members, familiar with it? Remember it?
Yes.
Yes.
Any discussion? Any questions? Entertain a motion to grant a 90-day extension of time to April 9th, 2026.
So moved.
Second.
To file of the Mylar plans. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstained? They got an extension.
Thank you.
8C, 25, sub 6, 71 Moxley Road. Map 17, lot 12000. It's a two-lot re-subdivision. The owner is Walter Wainwright Jr. The applicant is Walter Wainwright Jr. This was approved with conditions on 9/23/25. They're requesting a 90-day extension of time to file Mylar plans. Pretty cut and dry, Meredith.
Same.
You all remember this one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions for staff or anyone on this? Okay. Entertain a motion to grant a 90-day extension of time to April 9th, 2026 to file the Mylar plan.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Extensions granted. We're going to move to new business. Under new business, number 9A, we have 25 CAM 1, 188 Kittimorg Road, map 80, lot 8, 001, coastal site plan review for single family residents and appurtenant improvements on shorelands. The owner applicant is Chestnut Ridge LLC, and Meredith, what do we have?
This is a little different than other coastal site plan reviews that you have done. So I gave you a breakdown in your staff report that I will go over very quickly. This application is before the commission as the parcel is located within the coastal boundary. The coastal boundary is shown on this map that's in your packet in the thin red line. That's the coastal boundary.
Sorry.
defined under Connecticut General Statute 22A-94B. Within the coastal area, there shall be a coastal boundary which shall be a continuous line delineated on landward side of the interior contour elevation of the 100-year frequency coastal flood zone as defined and determined by the National Flood Insurance Act amended, or 1,000 linear feet setback measured from the mean high water mark in coastal waters, or a 1,000-foot linear setback measured from the inland boundary of the tidal wetlands mapped under section 22A-20, whichever is farthest inland, and shall be delineated on the seaward side by the seaward extent of the jurisdiction of the state. That's why I gave you a copy of the map.
Yeah.
Public Act 2533, signed by Governor Lamont on June 10th, 2025, with the effective date of October 1st, 2025, has removed the construction of single-family residence from the list of exemptions contained within Connecticut General Statute Section 22A-109B4. Previously, if you were building a single-family residence and it was within this boundary, you did not have to come before the commission. Single-family residences are not a mandatory referral to DEEP under PA 25-33. A coastal site plan application is required to be reviewed by the Zoning Commission and is only required to be submitted to DEEP if it meets other referral criteria such as shoreline flood and erosion control structures, activity within a coastal hazard area, or a site with tidal wetlands, beaches, dunes, or activities within FEMA-designated V, VE, A, AE, or LIMWA zones. The applicant is not proposing any of the referral criteria, and the site does not contain tidal wetlands, beaches, dunes, nor is it located within a FEMA flood zone. Therefore, it did not go off to DEEP for a mandatory referral. They have 35 days should it go to them, so we do not have to wait that 35 days before making any decision. In accordance with Connecticut General Statute Section 22A-106, a municipal board or commission reviewing a coastal site plan must determine whether or not the potential adverse impacts of the proposed activity on both coastal resources and future water-dependent uses are acceptable. I put in your packet a list of all of those. In determining the acceptability of potential adverse impacts of the proposed activity described in the coastal site plan on both coastal resources and future water-dependent development opportunities, a municipal board or commission is required to consider the characteristics of the site, including the location and condition of any coastal resource, consider the potential effects, both beneficial and adverse, of the proposed activity on the coastal resource and future water-dependent development opportunities, and follow all applicable coastal resource and use goals and policies stated in Connecticut General Statute Section 22A-92, which I attached, and identify conflicts between the proposed activities and any CCMA goals or policies. The Commission may incorporate conditions or modifications of coastal site plan approvals which mitigate the adverse impacts. This site that we are looking at tonight is a legally existing conforming lot. It's located within the R20 zoning district. The property is located northeasterly side of Kitty Moyle Road and is 337 feet from the nearest coastal resource, which is located on the southwesterly side of Kitty Moyle Road. This property was previously improved with a portion of a mobile home park, which has, both mobile homes have been removed. As indicated in the application, there's no coastal resources on or contiguous to the site. No coastal use policies are applicable. There are neither any beneficial or nor adverse impacts on coastal resources, and there is no unmitigated adverse impacts on coastal resources. I did send out the application to the town engineer, and he had no comments on the application. The building official has no adverse comments upon review of the plans submitted to date. The fire marshal did not comment. It was referred on November 26th. Uncas Health's only comment was that a well permit would be needed to be submitted by a licensed well driller. Mm-hmm. WPCA and Public Works, it was referred on November 26th, and they did not give any comments. This is simply before you because of the change in PA 25-33, and there are no coastal impacts.
And this is the very first one to come
correct.
To us, correct?
That's why I went through the whole thing.
Okay. Questions for staff? Chuck?
Water and sewer?
It has.
Sewer only.
Sewer.
Sewer only because.
On-site well and municipal sewer.
Mm-hmm. On-site well and municipal sewer. Thank you.
Is it possible to get a well without a licensed well driller filed for a permit? This sounds so odd to me, Uncas Health.
You always cover yourself because there's that one person.
black and white wells.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Joe.
Just for clarification, so this public act, so this is for a new house. Would this be applicable to additions and things like that also?
Depending on if it's a major or minor addition.
Okay.
I believe that's how they described it.
So there was a trailer there. They removed the mobile home. Now they want to build a house there.
Correct.
Okay. And it's probably, well, there's a well there right there already, right?
They're going to put in a new
well. Put a new well in. And never had a well.
They did. There's two mobile homes. It was one parcel. They split the parcel, built a single family residence on one of the lots, and now they're building another.
Okay, so they built a one family house in one area, so now they can build another one family house where the trails used to be, mobile homes. So whether they're sharing a well before or now they're.
The mobile homes? Yeah. I don't know. Can't answer that.
It's all one parcel.
They shared a dug well.
Yeah,
I'm
a dug well.
The property. They shared a dug well.
The dug well.
Which has been filled by a licensed well driller.
Right.
Okay, it was a drilled well, not a dug well.
It was a dug well. Dug. Yes. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Everybody good? Okay. Just for the record, note, I'm signatory to the LLC. I have no financial interest in this property, so therefore I have no conflict in whichever way this goes. So I'll abstain from voting, but we'll entertain a motion to move on.
One more question.
Go ahead,
is the existing
Chuck.
Well going to be filled in?
Has been.
Has been.
So no well there now, period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lisa?
Am I making the motion?
Would you?
Sure.
I make
a motion to approve with condition application number 25-CAM-1 to construct a single-family residence with on-site potable water supply well, interconnection to municipal sewer, driveway construction, and loom in seed-disturbed area in accordance with the application. Supporting documentation and a plan set entitled Coastal Site Plan Prepared for Chestnut Ridge, LLC, 188 Kitty Mog Road, Montville, Connecticut, prepared by Advanced Surveys, LLC, dated 11/8/25. As there are no coastal resources on or adjacent to the site, no potential impacts on coastal resources, and the proposed use is a use permitted by right in the R-20 zoning district. Condition, an approved zoning permit is required prior to the start of construction.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? For the record, I abstain. All set. We're going to move on now to the next item, which is 9B. Adaptive 25... excuse me, 25ZC2, Adaptive Reuse Regulation Application. Amendment to add new sections as follows.
Okay, this bit right here.
1.3, new definition, adaptive reuse development, 8.3.4, 9.3.4, 9B.2.7, 10.3.2, 11.3.2, 12.3.1, 13.3.1, 16.13, adaptive reuse development, and the applicant is the town of Montville. Hmm. We're looking to schedule a public hearing for these. Would you like to put in a little bit of information, Dennis, about this, or? Okay. All right. So we're just looking to set a public hearing for this application 25ZC2 for the next regularly scheduled planning and zoning meeting on January 27th.
So moved.
Hang on. Okay. Go ahead, Dennis.
I was just going to add that we had talked about the adaptive reuse. You remember the last meeting we had made some changes. It was all in the package. And the biggest change had to do with the uses. Take a look at that during your review. We'll go through the details of that during the very process.
Right. Okay, just trying to remind everybody what we're scheduling this for. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Public hearing set for January 27th, 2026. Agenda item 9C. We have a 824 review for the conveyance of approximately 0.11 acres of land on the northern side of PTA Lane to be combined with 1905 Route 32.
Okay, that's just about
Meredith.
The finance director, Julie Chapman, is requesting a planning and zoning commission that the Planning and Zoning Commission conduct a review for the sale of the above referenced land in accordance with Connecticut General Statute 8-24, Municipal Improvements. She's requesting to convey a small parcel of the land, approximately 0.11 acres, to Elaine Melchman. Julie further states the purpose is to accommodate and allow the property owner to incorporate the town-owned land into their parcel for personal or developmental use. The proposed area is to be combined with 1905 Route 32 and is shown on the plan that's in your packet. The meets and bounds of the portion to be conveyed can also be found in the attached legal description that's in your packet. 1905 Route 32 has been in the current ownership since February 13th, 2025. CEO Radford and myself completed an inspection of the area on April 29th, 2025, and we included pictures of the area in your packet. I did refer this 824 review document out to Public Works, WPCA, and the town engineer for review and comment. Kyle Halbert of CLA stated in one of his review comments that the utility company may require an easement for the overhead wires as they would cross over private property should the area be conveyed. The property owner of 1905 Route 32 did contact Eversource regarding this comment from CLA, and Eversource stated an easement would be required, and they further indicated that the easement should be granted to Eversource by the town and reported before any transfer of property. Listed under staff comments are under the following bullets. PTA Lane is a public right-of-way which terminates west of Mohegan School entry. Golden Road also terminates at the Mohegan School. There is no official public right-of-way connecting PTA Lane and Golden Road. These public roads are connected via a private driveway which appears to be a public right-of-way to the traveler and is located upon Board of Education property. The properties along PTA Lane are zoned in Commercial 1, Residential R20, and Government. Each of these zones can allow various intensities of development, including higher density housing, commercial, public facilities such as schools, public safety, and critical public infrastructure. Route 32 overlay zone also applies in this area. The future land use map identifies the areas north and south of PTA Lane as job investment areas and to the east as housing investment areas. These can be high intensity uses or mixed uses. Currently, PTA Lane is approximately 75 feet wide, and it is 77 feet wide approximately at the intersection of Route 32. 1905 Route 32 is a conforming lot. It meets our minimum lot size and is regularly shaped parcel and would not impede its future use. The reduction could restrict this reduction could restrict public street improvements, i.e. drainage, turning movements, and sightline improvements that may be required to support the types of uses that may be supported under job and housing investment areas. Should the Board of Ed desire to expand its educational facilities, or should the town take ownership of the school at a later date, the school site could also achieve a higher intensity use. The aforementioned may require improvements at the intersection of PTA Lane and Route 32, and a reduction from the 77-foot right-of-way to the 52-foot right-of-way could inhibit improvements such as lane widening, new lanes, etc., at the entrance to 32 that could be in conjunction with a major traffic generator. Considerations for this commission: weigh the appropriateness of disposing of a town right-of-way, which is perceived as unnecessary but may impede future land use under the plan of conservation and development. Consider a spot land disposal to create an oddly shaped public right-of-way, and the possibility of establishing a precedent to dispose of a defined area of right-of-way specifically abutting a private landowner whom wishes to utilize said acquisition for private development with no public benefit. There may be limited additional tax revenue.
Okay, Meredith, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, how is that for clarity to commission members? Any questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Hang on a minute. I'm going to start all the way down to the left. Mr. Summers, please.
So they're proposing reducing the width from approximately 75 down to 50. So does that match the road, the town road standards for this type of road?
Yes.
So the 50 foot is that standard. Okay. Thank you.
John, okay. I pulled up on, you call Google Maps here. Look at it. Okay. That area, you call it that address there, put up, shows a little, shows the house there. And so it's the property towards the PTA side. You know, you're there at PTA Lane, and you got the house right there?
PTA Lane.
Yeah.
And then there was a house that recently has been demolished.
Okay, yes. that's the property that got demolished right here.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So you got Bottle Electric, you got PTA Lane, and the other side, and you got the house that was just destroyed. Okay. And so the piece of the property in question, is that on the Bottle Electric side, or is that on the other side?
It would be adjacent to their property in the town right
away. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they want to hook it up to
right here.
Yeah. Okay.
They're increasing the lot size.
Okay. Okay, sounds reasonable to me.
Well, Chuck.
Question that I have is regarding the loss of a town right away to the Mohegan School. Is that it?
No.
It's a reduction of that right-of-way. It would be a reduction of the right-of-way of PTA Lane that leads towards Mohegan School, but it wouldn't be the elimination of that right-of-way.
A reduction of it, and how would that affect the town's use of the property of Mohegan School?
What we were describing in the report is in the plan of conservation and development, which is something you need to take into consideration in rendering your decision. The areas from Mohegan's, not including Mohegan School, but everything west of Mohegan School to Route 32 is in a jobs investment area. Mohegan School and beyond is in a housing investment area. So those are defined as being more intense type development. So multifamily of how many, you know, units, you know, 10, 20 units per acre, or larger scale, higher intensity and density commercial or mixed use. So what the staffer's report is saying is you're taking a 75-foot right-of-way, throttling it down to 50 feet in just one area, but the rest of it would stay 75. Mm-hmm. And then any future use of what the plan of development is saying could be a higher intensity going out to a very busy arterial state highway, Route 32. You're narrowing it down. You're only going to get two lanes, one in, one out on PTA lane forever. Hmm. Most likely. The chances of you ever getting another third lane to exit a left turn and a right turn, let's say, on PTA lane will be very challenging because you're restricting yourself. So want you to make sure that you're taking that into consideration because it could restrict some of the future land use in that area. Mm-hmm.
Chuck, this is, and again, if you look at the very last comments of the staff report, it's the classic example of what we've discussed at a lot of these 824 reviews is the town giving up a piece of property for lunch money, if anything, and then turning around with potential future development needing that road width or right-of-way width to actually build something that accomplishes something for the town. If you take a look at this, we talk about in our business here spot zoning.
Yeah.
And you know, this is, it's not rezoning, but it's spot land disposal. We have this wide right of way, but we're going to narrow it down for one property owner at the very beginning. I don't think it's a very good idea at all. It's a case of, again, being very short-sighted, yeah, disposing of property that entering onto a state highway. We know what the requirements are when these big developments come along, turning lanes, yeah, lights, et cetera, realignment of roads. And if we give up that property, what are we going to be doing?
And the property at the end of PT Lane is already serviced by municipal water and sewer, is that correct?
Yes.
Exactly what's needed for development.
Well, there's municipal water and sewer in Route 32.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yes, you have all the utilities you need to develop there. That's correct. I think there's way too much potential, especially at that point, at the intersection, yeah, of Route 32. I think that's a consideration. Go ahead.
That's a good point because the water and the sewer that's there, along with everything, which is why the plan of development is likely identifying that as job and housing investment area. And when we get into, we'll be talking more about House Bill 8002, we're going to need to identify areas in town that are designated to achieve our housing quota that the state is going to put on upon us. And this is the type of an area that might be one of those locations. It's like right next to all the infrastructure that you need, you know, for public transit, because you've got the bus line. You know, mm-hmm. So it might be a place that you have 3 or 4 or 5 story residential apartment buildings, you know, in 10 years from now or so, or something else. I mean, those are the things that we wanted to lay out in the staff report and convey. And I think that's why, you know, the POCD is broad and it's done like that purposely sometimes. But, you know, I think your point, public water, public sewer, that's why, it, you know, it's classified as it is for future land use.
And the property where the school is located now is zoned what?
Government.
Yes.
School itself.
So anything that went down there would require a zoning change?
No.
Oh, that'd be
not prior to it.
And it's also in the...
Anything before
it's
it.
It's in the overlay zone too, so the overlay zone overlays the government zone, so it trumps the government zone anyway, so you wouldn't need to have the zone change.
And Commissioner Lumpton, Ron McDaniel from WPCA commented, water in the area is served on Golden Road side.
Yeah.
So there's yeah, not yeah. currently.
Okay, so the water's on the Golden Road side, not the PTA side.
But it's available.
It's available.
And, right. You know, again, for once, what's in front of us right now, yes, it's a decision that someone is asking us to make in a short time frame. But the P part of our commission planning, this is what we're looking at yeah. for the future of the town of Montville, not for just some immediate fix. For someone who owns a parcel of land that would like to have it a little bit wider and sees it as no use to the town, I think in our putting our planning hat on, I see it differently. And
yeah,
I just urge the commission members to take a look at it because this is an area that has all our utilities. You know, it, our plan of development calls yeah. for our density to move in that direction.
It wouldn't remove, but it would restrict our access to developable land.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because I look at all, you have to look at all the safety. Okay, for the school, the only place there's a you call stoplights is on Golden Street. But if it gets very busy, PTA Lane, if it could be like that, the only way you could probably get out of it safely is on make a right-hand turn. If it stays wide, you can probably, if they put a light there, then you can make a left-hand turn while all getting whacked. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's it there. So we have to look at safety and everything else. So that may be the best bet just to keep it. And, you know, right on the road there.
Okay.
I'll comment. I'd like to comment. Thanks. I think for me, this is a very bad idea, especially for future development. Joe. I think you need to take back to the council that if we are ever going to have any future development there, this is not a good idea.
Yeah.
And based on Meredith's report, I didn't see any positives for approving this. So
in our report, page 2, we have a motion for an unfavorable recommendation.
Oh, can I just say one more word?
Sure, please.
Sorry, I apologize.
No.
And I'd assume this is going to be by ordinance, right? And it'd have to be a public hearing when the town conveys.
So your decision is a recommendation, basically, back to the town council.
Right.
If you give a favorable, then it's a majority vote. If it's an unfavorable, it's a 2/3 majority vote required by statute. In either case, it's going to a hearing, which is what they scheduled last night.
They did.
The other 824s, they just immediately went to a public hearing, and then I would imagine it would just, then that's when they would do their deliberations after they hear the public speak as well, so, and make their vote. So.
Okay. Chuck?
Which... I'd like to make a motion for an unfavorable recommendation. I make a motion to forward an unfavorable report in accordance with Connecticut General Statutes 824 to the Town Council for the conveyance of approximately 0.11 acres of land on the northern side of PTA Lane to be combined with 1905 Route 32, parcel 099-088-000. As described above and in the narrative prepared by Finance Director Julie Chapman, and as shown on the plan entitled Property and Topographic Survey, prepared for Daniel Malikman, 1905 Norwich New London Turnpike, Montville, Connecticut, prepared by Boundaries LLC, dated March 2025 and revised on 4/22/2025 for the reason listed under the staff comments. Specifically, the sale of this 25 feet is in conflict with the 2022 plan of a development future land use map and will reduce the town's ability to promote job and housing investment in the areas depicted upon said plan and as noted above.
Okay, thank you.
Second. I'll second that motion.
Right, we have a motion. We have a second from Lisa. And a poll vote? Or
yeah, do a roll call. Be safer.
There you go.
Please do, Mr. Secretary.
Okay. Commissioner Longton?
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Terry?
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Gillette's not here. Commissioner Pike?
Favor.
Commissioner Jarvis, yes. Commissioner Lundy, not here. Commissioner Koblick, not here. Commissioner Summers?
In favor.
And Commissioner Chairperson, Chairman Pena.
In favor.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Zoning matters, zoning enforcement officer report. Stacy.
Good evening.
Good evening. Stacy Radford, zoning and wetlands officer for the record. This report is for the period of November 18th, 2025 to December 8th, 2025. Total number of inquiries were 212. Total number of open zoning permits at the beginning of this reporting period were 432. 20 zoning permits were closed with the issuance of certificates of zoning compliance. 10 were closed without the necessity of CZCs. There were a total of 13 field inspections. A total number of 19 zoning permits were issued, giving us a total number of zoning permits currently open of 421. There was one new zoning complaint. 14 current zoning complaints are ongoing. There's a total number of 2 zoning complaints or enforcement actions were closed. No new wetlands complaints. I have 2 ongoing wetlands complaints. None were closed. And for the Inland Wetlands Commission, they had a total number of 4 applications as at their last meeting. 1 was approved, 3 were continued, and there were no EPA applications. Based on discussions we had last month, I just had a couple of updates to give to you guys. With reference to the water tower at 50 Cook Drive, I did conduct a site inspection, and the fence company was there relocating the fence. We're just waiting for a revised as-built for that. 310 Route 163, this was the property owner that I issued a cease and desist to that we discussed at the last meeting. He has hired a land surveyor and a PE who are working at putting together a site plan for submission to the commission. And the last thing I want to report on is 303 Route 32. They contacted me with reference to phase 2, which was the second building. Myself and assistant planner Meredith Badaluca went and conducted a final inspection. There were a couple of items that were not completed per the approved plan. I issued them a substantial certificate of zoning compliance pending this meeting so that I could bring it to your attention and you could make a determination if these items can just be administratively approved. In our opinion, looking at the items, they do not cause reason for not issuing a full certificate of zoning compliance, excuse me. However, we felt it necessary to bring it to the commission and let you make that determination. So there was a dumpster pad in a previous location that they were supposed to remove the concrete. And in this modification, the commission had said they wanted the concrete removed. They did not remove the concrete. Mm-hmm. The concrete is partially under a wooden guide rail, so no one can, they can park on it, but it's not like they'll ever put the dumpster back in that location. There's a 4-foot concrete sidewalk, which was to be installed outside of the step for unit P as in Peter. That's currently pavement on the modified plan that they brought in front of you. That was going to be concrete. Right now it's pavement. Again, you can still walk across it, so we don't feel it to be a problem. And lastly, there's an existing pavement in the lower parking area, which was to be removed, and the retaining wall area was to be squared off. Again, don't really feel like that would make much of a difference or impede any reason why a full certificate of zoning compliance shouldn't be issued. However, it would be up to the commission to make that final decision. And that is all I have.
So regarding your last comment, while we're here, you're comfortable with what you see out there?
Absolutely.
There's no safety issues. The concrete pad is flush, same elevation as the pavement.
Is.
It's not elevated.
Correct.
It's not a trip hazard.
Correct.
It's obstructed by a wooden fence. They can't put a dumpster there. They can't relocate it.
You can park on it. It's in a parking spot, so you can still park on it.
And them not squaring off the bottom parking lot, they think it actually looks to the forward path before you would have had it back up along a guardrail and potentially go fit it. And that would give themselves a little bit of a problem.
Hmm. Do we need a motion to make a recommendation to staff?
Let's make a motion.
I make a motion that we recommend staff approval.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? You're all good to go.
Okay.
Thank you very
much.
Thank
you.
Mr. Dennis. Land Use Director report, please.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm probably going to jump around here on my report, especially items A through F. I'm going to start with F first. I think Meredith covered that prior in the application anyways. We've talked about it, but Public Act 2533 had a number of changes related to CAM. One of them was also, and I might have mentioned this early on, now any development within a flood area, flood hazard area, even if it's not in the CAM area, has to be referred to DEEP. So that's something else that came up. I want to make sure you're aware of that. We're going to have to address that in our regulations. I think that's valid now. Wasn't it December 1st?
October 1st.
October 1st, yeah. Okay. I do want to mention that last night when I gave my report to the town council, they've asked, and I forgot to mention to staff, so I'll mention it now too, but they have asked that do some outreach to inform property owners of single-family homes, residences, of the CAM update. So that way they're aware that major modifications, mm-hmm. a new construction, you know, that it does need to come before you now. It's not exempt. It's under CAM. So you might start seeing some outreach on that. I don't know what that looks like yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we can use our new app as push notifications, you know, that type of a thing. So I'm, like I said, I'm probably going to combine A through F in this conversation. And we started discussing updating zoning regulations before we started talking about an update to the POCD. And maybe forming a working group. I did bring to the council's attention last night as well that these are being considered and will be getting discussed. And I've also talked with the mayor, and they're aware that this will be a significant effort time-wise on everybody's part, but also financially for the town. Staff is recommending that we basically throw our current zoning regulations out at this point and look in the new year to start drafting something new. The regulations have come to a point, I think, where it's difficult to administer. They're somewhat antiquated. They're not following some of the requirements of the law. There's some issues with the uses that we have listed, and I'll talk about those in a moment. They're not very user-friendly and organized, and looking to be business-friendly You know, we'd like to suggest that we do a complete overhaul, really start from scratch. I mean, I think it's time, and just looking at them, they are very 1970s and 80s-ish, and I've looked at regulations throughout the state. But I think they modernization for that and subdivision regulations in hand in hand, and then also our POCD. But before I get into the POCD, I did in your packet, you should have received the document here, sample. This is a table of uses from the town of Broughton. And they, I think maybe in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe had updated their zoning regulations. And this is an example of a more modernized approach to some zoning and conveying information to applicants. There are several pages here. There's a list of a lot of uses, and we don't even come close to that. But the reason I think it's very important is that it's really the uses are the foundation of what defines our community. If we don't include, or we include something that maybe we wouldn't have wanted to include, it could be detrimental for decades to come. But if we don't include something, it can still be detrimental, you know, for long term, because it might be a use that you want. So I think we want to start looking at our uses holistically. There is a clause in the C1 and C2 district that is basically says anything for profit's allowed. You know, we talked with our town council about that. Not town council, legal council. And that is illegal. So we do need to work on addressing that type of a matter. And related to uses, and Commissioner Pike, you had asked on 2227 what the building material was, and I think where you were headed was what is it going to look like, you know, when it's done. And
right.
You know, that goes into, you know, perhaps the commission wants to consider methods for having some oversight on design. You know, right now you don't have that. And under the new House Bill 8002, what a lot of the fallback is, it says, I'm not ignoring you.
No, it's all right.
Odd angle here. 8002, so you can't just simply use community character, you know, in character with the town. You know, that isn't enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is something that the commission wants to pursue, is looking at design guidelines. That's something that we should discuss. And you can regulate design, and it doesn't have to be onerous at all. You know, it can be very streamlined, but, you know, I think you get a bad rap because you can get some towns that really get into the nitty-gritty. They have advisory committees,
mm-hmm.
and they go back and forth all the time, and you hear nightmare stories of 3 or 4 iterations of design at some towns, and that's not what I'm suggesting. So that's something we should, you know, maybe we want to talk about. Various other structures. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, Meredith, but what I'm suggesting is if you're thinking along the same lines as we're suggesting, and this isn't just me, we've all talked about it, so I think we're of the same mindset, you know, start having some workshops to with maybe a subcommittee,
mm-hmm.
if that's the way you would want to work, on how we can tackle this moving forward. Tackle it in the light also of what needs to be addressed on House Bill 8002. There's some low-hanging fruit that I think staff, we can address under the current regulations. And before I pause, I do want to mention one other thing related to the item here, Department of Housing meeting. I met with the Department of Housing last Monday at a very good call with a representative who runs their technical assistance program. We were put in contact through the COG together. They have money for communities to assist in advancing housing programs, and that can take the form of providing grant with no match required. It's all a rolling. It's part of like a negotiation, and they help talk us through what we can qualify for to draft new zoning that would help advance housing in Montville. It could be part of POCD update. And it could range up to $125,000 or more dollars in funds. So this is something I'm working with them on. I have a consultant, Goman and York, coming in at a meeting with on Thursday to brainstorm the approach for this. And then that would also be developing a work plan for our housing plan that we have to put together. And we need a housing plan by June 1st, 2028, 2.5 years, but it's going to take a while to do. I'm going to pause there, see if there's any questions. I threw a lot out.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick question. Will you be requesting any kind of a increase in the commission's budget to cover the expenses of doing this?
Yes, there'll be a request for capital for the next budget cycle. So the funds wouldn't be available until July 1, I think it is, or roughly there, for the fiscal year. So yes, and the mayor and I were just talking about that earlier today, and we have in the past, and that, like, again, that was also mentioned to the town council last night. So they're aware that that request will be coming. So I think between appropriations here, locally, and what we can get for grants as well, I think we'll be positioned to do some good work over the course of the next 12, 18, 24 months.
I do like the idea of the design. That was my whole point. There needs to be some complementary architectural thought process as we move forward in Montville instead of just thank you for bringing that up.
It doesn't need to be town-wide. It can be done in certain areas. The 32 or certain, it can be very user-friendly.
Yes.
And I think that's the intent.
Okay,
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead,
Jeff. You mentioned some of the design features and all that. I was involved here when Montville Commons came in, and the aesthetics and colors was a big issue, with Home Depot and everything else coming in. But with that said, and this is applicable to all municipalities with their zoning regulations, most of the municipalities have gone beyond what Connecticut General Statute 8-3 is empowered to do. So we got to be careful. We got to rein that in. What's the intent of 8-3 and all that? Because as a building official, I get a lot of calls as to requiring zone approval. We have a lot of municipalities saying, hey, I'm replacing a window. Okay, require zoning approval, the way it's worded. That's not the intent. So we got to really refine these regulations, hone it in. What is the intent of the statutes and what can we regulate?
I do have other things.
Nope. Any other questions right now?
You keep firing, Dennis.
Okay. on HB8002, I put together a memo best I could. I might have, hopefully I got it correct, but I'm sure as I had an error last night's town council meeting on a fair rent commission matter, but if anybody have questions on the memo, if you had a chance to look at it, you want me to walk you through it at all, or just touch on some of the highlights, I can do that.
Yeah, please do.
So, the highlights, the good thing is, and I think this is what scares a lot of people, is that it's requiring housing as of right. It's requiring, that you can't regulate parking for residential. And you kind of already achieved that here. So, I think it's more formalizing some of it. So I think that's a good thing. It does state, so I'm on this item one on the second page. The first page is just some definitions really from background. The first item is as of right housing for certain housing types. And so it's not carte blanche. My understanding is if you have housing as part of a mixed use development and on a commercial property, then you have to allow the housing as of right. So what they call summary review, which is defined in the front, but it's basically an as of right site plan review.
which is what you, you do now, just like we're doing 2227 Route 32 earlier. And then transit community middle housing, that's a long fancy term, but it's a type of housing within a transit-oriented development zoning district. And that's another tool that the housing bill allows, and we'll talk about that in a moment. There's some miscellaneous items that we will need to change, and these are going to have to be done by July 1st, such as not being able to prohibit childcare in residential zones, and I'm just going to paraphrase these. Recycling, you can't prohibit the use of recycling in storage bins or restricting their locations. Imposing certain conditions on manufactured homes. List of items on nonconformities. I'll go down to some highlights. Minimum floor area. I don't think we have this one anyways, but you can't establish a minimum floor area greater than the minimum set forth in the building code.
Which doesn't have one.
So, and then again, minimum parking. You can't require any minimum parking below 16 or low or less units. But you can, with some caveats, for greater than 16 units, it is subject to sort of a parking study. And there's a list of criteria. It kind of basically meet that now anyways. We have a lot of flexibility there. And then design regulations, which is what we were just talking about. You can't just say character, you know. Talk about parking. And item number four, the housing growth plan, which was formerly the affordable housing plan, which we have one the COG did a couple years ago. It's still, well, it's not valid really anymore, but it met the requirement at the time. This takes the place of the affordable housing plan. There's two options that the town can take. It can be, you can go your own route and develop your own housing plan, or you can join the COG and go with the regional plan. And they'll develop a plan with you in context of the rest of the region. So there's no decision that needs to be made on that right now, but you're essentially, as part of the housing plan, as I understand it, in really simplistic terms, is you identify where you're going to put your housing to achieve your allocated number of units that you need to meet. And December of next year, I think it is, a year from now, the state is going to be giving every town in the state their required mandate of how many units they need to meet or plan for, at least. And you have to go through a whole calculation of developable land, the whole analysis that has to take place. In order to demonstrate that you can meet that quota in X, Y, and Z locations of your town. It's also related to two new zoning districts, and this is related to funding. You could adapt the transit-oriented development district, which you would be qualified for because the Route 32 corridor meets the minimum criteria for public transit, and that is by needs to have public stops on the hour at minimum, served by the regional transit authority, which you have. Seat goes up and down 32 every hour, basically during the prime time, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, right through until 6 o'clock. What it does, if you adopt a zone as a TOD, if you adopt a housing growth zone, I think it's called. As well, which has other caveats to it. It makes you eligible for other discretionary funding from the state.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that, then you become eligible for, there's a Grayfield development fund, and then there's gonna be the housing growth fund. That's not gonna be established for two more years, but that is gonna be, I think, administered by OPM. So I don't know how much they're going to fund it, if they will ever fund it, but you speculate that maybe they will be funding it. But you'll be able to utilize and draw money for infrastructure improvements, you know, extending water, extending sewer, new roads, bridges, whatever, and other aspects too. And I think there's also, unless they took it out, an increase, a 5% increase for your state reimbursement for school construction. Mm-hmm. I think there's something, is that something
there's something in that bill that ties what you do for housing, you get increased state funding for educational purposes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of carrots that are. But I think the town is poised to meet a lot of this because, like I said, you're doing a lot of things as of right already. You're not afraid of it, and a lot of towns are. So I think that's good. But there's a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work. Priority development housing is on as well. So. Those are the highlights there. I'm going to jump back up to the POCD. The POCD was created in 2010. And some of you probably know more about how it was done and the type of engagement it had, you know, in order to define it. It was a brief update in 2022. But when we look at it and preparing the trail grant, which I'm still working on, and preparing the recent CIF grant that we submitted last week, when I was working with Parks and Rec on their CIF grant application, and as we just talk in general, there's a lot of things that just doesn't seem to address for what the vision of the town is probably looking at this point. So with the housing plan that we need to develop, in talking about redoing the zoning regulations, we're suggesting also an update, complete new plan of conservation and development as well, because they all kind of go hand in hand. I had done some research. I was talking with the mayor on the approach to it, and there's a thought that perhaps the town would want to establish a advisory committee or a steering committee, perhaps, of some sort, from representatives from other commissions. That might be one approach. Ultimately, the POCD is your purview. Mm-hmm. By state statute, it could just be led by your commission. So I'm putting on the table for you to discuss an approach for that, maybe to make that decision tonight. But if you were to decide to have formulate another advisory committee that would have these representatives, and I talked with other area towns of how they're doing it. Waterford just completed their POCD update. It cost $100,000, and mm-hmm. the Planning and Zoning Commission led that effort. I spoke with, or corresponded with the director in Groton. They're just starting theirs. Their Planning and Zoning Commission is running with it, and they've allocated, and it's costing them $200,000. And both Waterford and Groton are paying out of pocket. Stonington has an advisory committee, and they received money from DOH, Department of Housing, same sources that I had mentioned as well. So some of that, as well as a little bit from local funds, but they're going to be doing it over the course of several years because they just decided not to pull that much money together, which sounds like it might be painful to do it over a course of 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of drags it out. And a lot of other towns do have advisory committees and implementation committees as well. So it runs the gamut. I mean, it's really up to you all. It might be a representative of this commission, somebody from town council, somebody from Parks and Rec, Public Works and Solid Waste, if I'm getting the name correct. I don't know. You all know the commissions. But, and that would be a group that would be appointed and established by the town council. So throwing that out there for recognition. But I think coming in the new year, the ball's going to start rolling. I think we're going to get funding from Department of Housing. I'd be surprised if we didn't. But I think we'll be able to get some funding even before the end before the end of this fiscal year to start things on the zoning side, too. I just want to start getting ourselves organized.
mm-hmm.
So we're planners, so we like to plan.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if anybody has any thoughts.
That's it.
I keep going.
Did you like the podcast? Did anyone listen to
it? I haven't heard the podcast. I apologize.
Oh, I forgot.
Podcast of what?
So, I do have a question.
Good, fire away.
Are we clear on the definition of affordable housing?
Yeah.
I mean, people have a lot of different views of what affordable housing is. Is there a state definition now for affordable housing that's changed, or is it still the same?
The minimum requirement for affordable housing, I believe, is 80% of area median incomes.
That's the way I see it. Okay, so it hasn't changed.
80% of what?
80% of area median incomes.
Right.
Good
job. Now, with that statute 830G, which this recently came about, is if a municipality, you know, we're shooting for the 10% goal, the state views that 10% built. So you may go through planning and zoning approval for more than 10%. You can't stop if somebody comes in with another 830G. They can keep coming in. It goes by the number of units built and available.
Right, but I want
Yes.
My concern is that we stay on track with what affordable housing is.
Yeah.
That definition, 80% of the median income. So if the median income of Montville is 80,000, it's going to be 64 grand.
Yep.
I just want to make sure that's what I'm understanding.
Yes.
That has not changed.
That has not changed.
Thank you.
Chuck?
Just a clarification further from what Wills was saying. For affordable housing, is the state saying you shall, or the goal is?
For the 10%?
Yeah.
You must, otherwise you are not exempt from, every town has to meet 10%.
Yes. Pulling Fairfield County.
Everybody. If you don't, that's what makes you susceptible to what they call an 830G application, which somebody comes in and can propose an 830G application anywhere in the town, except an industrial zone, at any density. It can look, feel, be whatever it is, and it comes in, and the burden of proof is on the commission, and the test is public health and safety only. It's not health, safety, and welfare.
All right.
My question speaks to funding. If the state is saying we must, first of all, the town doesn't build housing. Private contractors do. And if you don't get private contractors to build the affordable housing, then we don't meet the standard. So how do we then do that? We raise taxes and build our own houses?
Well, one of the things that you can do is, like, what this evening, 2227, yes. I had asked, can you make some of them affordable? You know, put them. You can require them in your zoning, and some towns do. As Ms. Bartlett had said, they require any multifamily. You set aside 10%. You have to make them deed restricted.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor and I met with the new owners of the Villages Apartments. They, as of August, even though they weren't designated officially as affordable, they were naturally occurring affordable. NOAA. So there's in a lot of towns, there's areas that are naturally occurring areas of affordability, and I'm sure Montville has a lot of them. But they're not deed restricted, but they are considered affordable by nature because of the market and the way that it's designed. So that's why Ms. Bartlett, I had asked, can you do that? So there's mandates there. The other thing with the transit-oriented development district under 802 and the priority housing zones, if you adopt these and you prove how many units you can get a certain allocation designated, even though it's not built or getting the CO, you can get a designation towards meeting your 10% allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been changed here. But I think to your point, a lot of the towns that don't allow things as of right or by summary review already that require special permits, they're having trouble meeting their quota because they do it by special permit, because that makes it much more challenging
And if they see something that comes in and doesn't pass their acid test, doesn't meet their criteria on the special permit, they have that legislative authority to deny it. So it makes it more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the applications that are coming in for multifamily probably just naturally are going to be affordable for your area median income, because it is the area. It's not just Montville's census income. It's by HUD's area median income. So it's Norwich and London area. So
yeah,
take that into consideration.
Okay. Lise?
No, I think I was surprised when I got on this commission that we did not have that in our regs, that a certain percentage of housing had to have been affordable. I know in a lot of towns that they do. And the developers come in, they already understand that it's in our regs, and
mm-hmm.
I don't think it discourages any kind of development.
Yeah, because we don't have public housing here. The only public housing we have here is for the two senior housing. That's it.
Hmm.
And they don't qualify for affordable housing because restricted just to senior citizens and disabled.
Not to beat it, but I was talking to my daughter the other night, and she was already thinking about she's not even in college yet, but she's thinking, when I graduate from college, how am I going to get started? How am I going to buy a house? You know, and I was crunching the numbers on my own. I'm like, okay, starting salary of somebody that, in that profession that she's thinking about, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at Zillow. I'm like, you know, people like it's not like when I was, you know, bought my first house 30 years ago, but you know, it's tough, you know, for people that are going to be, you know, in you know, whatever profession it is. It's our firefighters, our police officers, our teachers, and our municipal workers. I mean, it's, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's a lot of people beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, part of it comes down to education, because there is, the DECD has funding, which very few people are aware of, for private developers to build affordable housing. They're giving away millions of dollars. You know, and they do place deed restrictions on it, but it's quite a bit of money they are shelling out on an annual basis.
And included in our 10% are single family residents
mm-hmm.
that are also financed by CHAPA or USDA loans.
Mm-hmm.
So those are included in our 10%. So it's not just multifamily.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because you have to meet that qualification. 80% AMI in order to get one of those homes. So those are.
It's like when Montville Manor was built, it was built as starter homes.
That's how they finance.
Yeah.
So if you get a conventional mortgage,
yeah.
That's a.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. Or we call it, went for the military, we probably got FDA.
Okay.
So, cool.
Go ahead.
And there's restrictions on affordable housing too, especially when it's federally backed. There's only so much of a profit margin you can make.
Yeah.
There's a number of restrictions, which doesn't make it attractive to some people also. My concern is affordable housing has to be something besides a condo, a studio apartment. It has to be something behind that. People, you know, I work with engineers who want to live in homes. They have a dual income, no kids, dinks, $200,000 a year, and they can't find anything to live in, to your point. Right? They can't find anything to live in because they can't afford to buy a house. And so that's the real challenge, I think, facing us. Is something besides an apartment or a condo. People want to live in a home.
Well, you know, in our regulations, I forgot exactly how it's all written, but, you know, we have definitions for single-family residence, single-family attached, single-family detached, and then, but, you know, but you can't do single-family standalone, like, you know, empty nesters that want to have their own house but want to be in a community, but they want their own detached place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't do that in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a traditional neighborhood, you know. But you know, they'll just want the common land, you know, and that's not allowed in some of our regulations in some of the areas. But by allowing that, people can feel vested in buying their own. Oh, it's part of an association and part of a condominium type arrangement, but it's a freestanding single family structure that has no common walls with anybody else. It feels like their own home. It's on a shared lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That requires higher density, reduced road building costs,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, contribution from the towns for road maintenance. So
you're not in an HOA taking care of your own roads and stuff.
Yeah, if you look up new urbanism, it's not new anymore, but you know, probably 20 years ago, you know, it was really getting to be a big thing to rebuild what was old, you know, and, you know, the Essex, the Stonington boroughs, you know, it got to a point you couldn't build it anymore, you know, but that's what everybody's going back to, you know, so, I'm talking a lot, but I don't know, if we're going back to the POCD, if the commission has a feeling on how the commission feels like the POCD should be approached, or maybe talked about a lot. Your mind might be spinning. Want to table it and talk about it another time.
Well, can we, as commission members, consider what you think would work for the idea of some sort of steering committee? So when we come to our next meeting, what Dennis had thrown out there that other towns are doing, go to the town council, we ask them to consider forming a steering committee with members from someone from the different departments, commissions, so we can begin to put this together, because what you just covered in the last course of agenda item 11, there's a lot of work to be done here.
Right.
And the zoning regs, plan of conservation and development. I mean, we're basically starting from the beginning. This isn't, it doesn't go together fast. And when it does go together fast, it doesn't go together good.
Right. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the last few renditions of that are what we're looking at now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to need a lot of cooperation, and we're going to need to, I think, come together with some ideas for the next meeting on how we want to handle that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a good idea to have a steering committee, because we don't know how other departments run and their needs, because something we decide may have a major impact on another department, like water and sewer, public works.
Well, we should be thorough about it.
Right.
So.
Mm.
Board of Finance Department is a huge player in this, because you know, the POCD makes guides the investments that's going into the town,
mm-hmm.
and you know, how that gets allocated and planned out is going to be, you know, important too. So.
Okay. So, agreed. Give some thought to it. We have some discussion for the next meeting.
Yep.
Present something to the town council on that. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions for Dennis? Thank you. That's a lot. You got a lot going on.
Yeah, and I really
it's been a year.
Welcome to Montville, Dennis.
The SIF grant for the town center and facilities was submitted. I'm wrapping up the deep grant for the trail planning study that's going in next week.
So you've got a lot going on, and you're doing a good job so far, Dennis.
But we're watching.
Thank you. No, thank you very much.
Y'all have to listen to the podcast.
It's
the podcast.
They sent the link out.
The link.
They sent the link out.
An email.
Did you listen to it?
Not yet.
Yeah.
I was on vacation.
He sent us the link in the email.
I'm on the call.
I had no internet access.
Call like Zoning Matters podcast or what?
All of yours are saved. Okay, I'll go back.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Appreciate it. This evening, under other business, we have none. Item number 13, correspondence. Meredith?
Very quickly.
Sure.
41 Beckwith Road, we discussed them modifying the telecommunications tower last month. It was approved by the Siding Council, so we just got a letter saying thank you.
Okay. Motion to go into executive session with the commission and staff.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Well.
All right. It's
that
8:45.
Is it cold in there?
I don't know. I'm not gonna take a chance.
That's a good
idea. I need a digital one.
Can I bring my day?
All right, let the record show, we've exited executive session at 7:55 p.m. No votes were taken, and we are going to entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
And third. Let's go.
Favor.
Aye.
Aye.
Everybody have a great.